and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalzell. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew, as stated in the introduction. I'm here with Henry and Josh. How are you guys? Did you have a nice weekend? Did you enjoy the football? What else did you get up to?
Well, I enjoyed it. I mean, I missed the Arsenal game because I was playing myself, but it was great to come back to the changing room and find out that Arsenal had won under very controversial circumstances. So that's always great. Shame it didn't happen against Tottenham, because it would have only have riled their feathers further.
Yeah, what about you, Josh? Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, I got to watch the Dortmund and Schalke, which was one of the best games I've seen in quite some time. There's nothing quite like blowing a four-goal lead at home in front of 70,000 screaming fans that were quickly silenced. It was very entertaining.
I would have loved to have seen a before and after photo of you, Josh, at 45 minutes and at 90 minutes.
There was a bit.
For those
difference.
Who aren't aware, Josh has a slight fetish for Schalke. just a slight fetish, yeah.
Awesome.
Which is why he's quite excited after one of the most remarkable games of the last few years, really. I watched bits of it, and it was quite exciting. I have also been sick all weekend, which is not necessarily great, but I'm feeling much better today.
We appreciate the dedication.
Yes.
Yeah, good old stomach bugs. They don't necessarily leave you in the best of form. But there we go.
Mesut Ozil would argue otherwise,
gosh.
I think.
We will touch on Mesut Ozil and his mysterious illnesses later in the programme. But it's glad to know that you two are doing well, and we will move on to the Cologne game last Thursday, where Arsenal surprisingly and perhaps a little oddly qualified for the Europa League knockout stages despite a loss.
I don't know whether that's surprising or unsurprising. We're talking about Arsenal. I keep having to pinch myself to remind myself of these things, but
yeah, probably expected.
Although, in fairness, I expected us to go to Burnley and that be the biggest banana skin, and we came out victorious, even though we were fortunate in that. But yeah, I think the less said about the Cologne game, the better. We qualified, we can now play Eddie and Nketiah and all these youngsters, because I think we saw against Cologne that a lot of that starting 11 are simply not up to par.
Well, yeah, that's definitely an opinion that's fairly well-versed and well-agreed with, I think, within the Arsenal circles. Was there anyone for you, Josh, who really stood out as a positive performer, or was it mainly disappointments?
I mean, it wasn't even just that it was disappointment. It was just boring. Ainsley Maitland-Niles stood out because he was fantastic. He was pushing so hard to get something going on that side. I you know, he deserves credit because I feel like he was kind of stranded out there. I wasn't impressed by Giroud, anybody. I thought Will Shearer, you know, the numbers for him looked nice, but I think he got a little bit of the Alexis syndrome where he felt like he had to do everything himself, and then it just started getting sloppy. But I agree with Henry. The less we say about this game, the better, because it's over. It didn't matter. Moving on.
We're through. Yeah. I mean, to add to the Ainsley Maitland-Niles point, I'd actually like to see him and Joe Willock in midfield for the final group game, simply because I made this point on Twitter during the game itself. I really lost my temper with Francis Coquelin and Mohamed Elneny. I just don't think that they offer the adequate competition for Xhaka and Ramsey in midfield, and I think you need to look for alternatives in there. I think you need to shake things up.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a stance that a lot of Arsenal fans are coming to nowadays, that Coquelin and Elneny, while useful in certain ways, in certain manners, there are limitations to their ability.
I couldn't have put that any better myself.
Yeah, especially on the ball. Mm. So we will leave the FC Köln game there because it was truly terrible.
Thank you. Thank you.
I will put out one last note. Arsenal have qualified, and they've qualified in top spot of the group, despite the loss, because of the draw between Red Star Belgrade and Barcelona.
What's the bet, though, that we still come up against a team like Borussia Dortmund or Bayern Munich somehow, somewhere?
Yes, yes. There will be a way where Arsenal suddenly come up against the best team in the competition and get pummeled 5-1 in both legs. They will find a way to do it.
Then we'll be in really big trouble. I mean, yeah. We might be in really big trouble, but let's cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yes, quite. So there is still one more Europa League game to play for. It is completely useless. I suspect Wenger will roll out the kids in that game. It'd be interesting to see what kind of team he plays. But Arsenal are in the next stage of the Europa League. It will be contested with 8 Champions League teams coming into that. So depending on the quality of the opposition there, Borussia Dortmund look like they might be in there. RB Leipzig look like they might be in there as well. But obviously there's still a round of games to go there. But we will keep you all informed with how that progresses and when it progresses. But for now, let's take a short little break and then we'll come back and review what happened on Sunday at Little Old Turf Moor. Hello and welcome back. As I said before the short interlude, we will now look towards the Sunday game against Burnley. Josh, just as a quick first glancing question, did you think Arsenal were going to win 5 minutes to go or 5 minutes remaining? Did you think that Arsenal were going to be able to nick a late goal there?
I did, and you know, I was texting my brother. I'm serious. My brother texted me and he said, well, at least Arsenal played hard. And I said, no, they're still going to score. And I'm dead serious. And there it is.
So. The optimistic American living up to his name. Well, I mean, you were right. You were right.
I mean, I got to say, though, even at halftime, and the commentators on NBC were saying this, too, it was surprising how lively and energetic and up for it Arsenal look, because this is a game at Turf Moor where you'd expect, I mean, I hate to say expect, but where you'd almost assume that they would come out a bit flat. They just had a really good win followed by whatever the hell happened in Köln. And, you know, even if we would have finished 0-0, it would have sucked because we wouldn't have gotten the points we needed, but we still looked up for every minute of that fight, which is something I think that it deserves a lot of credit, because I think a lot of that goes down to Arsene Wenger too, because he always gets a lot of slack for not preparing his teams for big games. Well, if you're going to slack him off for that, then you kind of got to give him credit for this too.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Henry, I know you said you were playing yourself, so you didn't get to watch the game. I guess at the end of the day, the win is all that matters, is that right?
Or does I mean, yeah, precisely. I mean, even though I missed the game itself, I had a horrible feeling looking at the build-up to the game. Apparently it was cold, sleet. I just had banana skin for me written all over it, because in my research prior to the game, I noticed that had Burnley won on the weekend, they would have been in the top four. They would have been in the position that we're now in. So for me, it just had banana skin written all over it. And it's what top teams have to do nowadays. No game can be taken for granted. Manchester United weren't at their best against Brighton, but still came away with a result. And Arsenal did the same against Burnley. So whilst obviously you would prefer for them to go out and come out with a comfortable victory in a dominant fashion, I don't mind if we show a bit of cojones and come away with a 1-0 win.
Good old Troy Deeney. Troy Deeney happens there.
I love Hector Bellerin on Twitter. He's just brilliant. Brings that bit of cheek and humour to it.
Yeah, he's excellent. He commented on his girlfriend's Instagram, didn't he? And she was wearing an all red outfit, and he commented saying, "Oh, you're wearing North London today."
Nice.
Yeah, and I guess with the win, Arsenal have now won 2 in a row since the 3-1 loss to Manchester City a few weeks ago before the international break. They're now up to 4th in the table.
We're back where we're supposed to be.
They're just a point behind Chelsea, who drew to Liverpool. They're ahead of Spurs, importantly. And they're
power shift.
They're only 4 points behind Manchester United. So this is, you know, this was a weekend where moves were made, really, on Arsenal's part. Those top four hopes are still alive. Manchester City keep winning. Are those slim title, I don't even want to call them hopes.
Don't even ask the question. I know where you're going.
Title, are those title moves?
Yeah, go
still,
to the optimism of the American still for this. Don't come my way. Don't come my way.
What do you think, Josh?
Oh, as far as if we can...
That was a little awkward, wasn't it? I was expecting this to go to you, Josh.
I'm just sitting here staring at the 12-point gap. No, I mean, you know, Granit Xhaka and Petr Cech have both now said there's no reason not to hope for it. And I agree. I mean, no title was ever won in November. There's still so much work to do. And if you want to try to tell me that Manchester City look unbeatable, I'll fight you all day on that, because Huddersfield made them look beatable. Bournemouth made them look beatable. They've looked beatable before. I just think they need to, and I'm very confident that when they come to the Emirates, I'm not sure when that is exactly, that we can beat them. And I'm convinced that once they get proven mortal, then there's going to be that drop off, and I'm sure they'll recover from it. And it's going to require Arsenal to obviously continue to win, which is always a dicey thing to bet on. But it's not like you can completely rule it out, because Arsenal's done, you know, I always say that Arsenal's at their best when you completely count them out. And I don't think that this title race is over. I mean, it's not over. There's still time for City to collapse. They're not this unbeatable engine that everybody pegs them as. They have a few really good games where everything clicks, and they have a few games where they kind of scrape by.
I mean, I just look at it. I was looking at our previous fixtures recently, and it's just so infuriating looking back at the Watford performance and the Stoke performance, and just to think, okay, had we lost to Liverpool and drawn against Chelsea but beaten Stoke and Watford, I would be inclined to agree with you and say, yeah, we can still go for it, but where we are and how our mental makeup, I just don't see it. I'm still not I haven't been converted into a believer that Arsenal are a changed team just yet.
Yeah, I mean, Mauricio Pochettino said after Spurs' draw with West Brom that their title race was over and they are only a point behind Arsenal. I happen to think that Arsenal can still win the title, and I say that with a very heavy urn, because
Andy, you've been converted.
No, I'm not. I guess there's a certain emphasis on the can. I think they can win the league title. I think that can is probably a probability of about 5%, little more than that. I'm backing Chelsea. I'm backing United. And obviously, I'm back in City ahead of Arsenal to win the league, really. But there is still the opportunity there. I mean, last year Chelsea, you know, were getting dismantled to the tune of 3 goals at the Emirates in September, and they turned it around. So even Premier League winning teams can have bad starts and struggle, and then they go on these long, extended, unbeaten runs where they win many, many games in a row, and they begin to pull away from the pack. And while I don't necessarily think Arsenal can do that, I do think there's a chance that Arsenal may be able to at least haul themselves into a decent run of form. Having said that, I'll pose this to you, Henry, seeing as you seem to be the least optimistic of the three of us. Do you think it's more likely that Arsenal win the league or City go unbeaten?
More unlikely that Arsenal win the league, I would say. I mean, I desperately want Manchester City to lose just so that we can knock them down a couple of levels and just keep that one record.
That Invincibles has always got left.
I tell you what, though, if they come to the Emirates and they're still... If they come to the Emirates and they're still unbeaten, I would, to quote Kevin Keegan, I would love it if we beat them in our own backyard and really gave it to them, because I imagine the atmosphere would be relatively similar. Not exactly reminiscent, but reminiscent of a derby game, because that would, I think, true Arsenal fans from that era, and a lot of Arsenal fans, myself included, grew up in that era, even though I'm relatively young. That record is something that we still hold dearly. So if it does come to that, that is a game that I would be turning into and watching very, very closely.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Right, let's delve a little deeper into this Burnley game then. Josh, I guess I want to ask you, because there was definitely a change from the first half to the second half. What do you think tactically or executionally was different in Arsenal's performance from the first half to the second half?
I think that they weathered that. There was the first 30 minutes of the match, we were just constantly under siege, and our defense held up. And once we withheld that first 30 minutes, I don't even think it was at half that it switched. I think it was after that first 30 minutes where we were able to get out of that without giving anything up. We really started to believe, and we really started to push for it, because Burnley couldn't keep that up all match, and we knew that. And, you know, as soon as that shifted, it was like night and day. We went from being the shell in our box for the 30 minutes to putting Burnley in a shell in their box for the last 60 minutes. So I don't even know if it was a tactical change. I think it was just withstanding the initial bit of pressure that you're always going to see from a team like Burnley in that first half hour.
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair enough. And actually, the pressure that Burnley did put on Arsenal, it came from wide areas, didn't it? It came through crossing the ball. Mm-hmm. They made 19 crosses in the whole of the game. 15 of them came in the first half, and of those 15, 12 came in a 20 minute period between the 15th minute and the 35th minute. So this was clearly a tactic. I mean, you know, obviously Sean Dyche played Ashley Barnes up front, who technically, and it doesn't really have that cutting edge quality of even say Chris Wood, their club record signing, but in terms of being a physical presence as the spearhead of that side, he is a real, real challenge to deal with. I think Mustafi dealt with him very well. We will get on to Mustafi later in the show. But it was a clear tactic of Dyche to try and pin back Arsenal with aerial balls, especially from wide. I thought Robbie Brady and Gudmundsson on either wing were really, really good, especially in the first 30 to 35 minutes. I guess just a couple of stats to show how Arsenal changed. In the first half, they completed 80% of their passes, which is not necessarily great, but it is fairly average. In the second half, that rose to 86%, which is much better. Burnley, conversely, completed 81% of their passes in the first half, and in the second half, that figure dropped to only 70%. And I think that was because of Arsenal's higher pressing game that they played in the second half. They forced Burnley into long, aimless, wayward passes up to Barnes, who was completely isolated, and Mustafi and Koscielny in Monreal were able to deal with them relatively comfortably. Henry, was there anything that you saw maybe in the second half resolve that you were particularly happy with?
I mean, there wasn't anything in particular. I just love the fact that, obviously, it's well known now that we've come and beaten Burnley, three times on the trot now, yeah, with last-minute goals. Time. I just love the fact that, much like Manchester United under Sir Alex Ferguson, I mean, I'm not comparing us to the Manchester United under Sir Alex Ferguson, but that we're able to continue to battle until the end of games, because I'm not sure about the statistics about it, but I'm positive that we score a lot of late goals. The game against Bournemouth last year comes to mind, even though we should have won that game and not drawn that game. We're a team that does battle. We do lack it at certain times, i.e. case in point Watford, but when this team is in the right frame of mood, they have shown me that they are willing to battle and that they are willing to fight for the cause. So that's what really, really impressed me more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at the last goal. Josh, was it a penalty?
Yeah, of course it was a penalty. I mean, first of all, and not that this should factor into it, but Bellerin had a penalty not called on him earlier, which was even more blatant. I forget who it was that tackled him, but his cleats...
Robbie Brady.
Yeah, his cleats Brady, were up by Brady. Bellerin's chest, and they didn't call that. And, you know, I do think that Ramsey embellished it, but it was poor defending. I believe it was Tarkowski. His hands were all over Ramsey. And if you do that in the box, I mean, you leave the ref no choice. You can't defend like that and expect it not to get called.
I think it's one of them. Isn't it? I mean, I've played center half, and every defender will tell you that they have been in that position and they put their hands all over the attacker, and it will happen numerous times every single game. It just so happens that the ref, and they are technically, by the letter of the law, they are all fouls. It's just that the referee very rarely gives them as fouls. So when one is given, you know, I know Sean Dyche after the game wasn't very happy with the decision.
I don't blame him.
Which is maybe right or wrong, but I think that there is a lack of consistency from the referees in terms of either giving these decisions or not giving these decisions.
I mean, it's one of those that you look at that. If that goes against you, you're livid. But when that goes for you, you keep quiet and you kind of have a little giggle to yourself about it. I mean, I feel a bit for the Burnley fans because they really have shown themselves to be adequate competition this year. But I look at that and I can't. We won the game. Let's just get this out of the way. And I'm very happy. But I look at that and I win, and I think, yeah, we really just scraped this win by the skin of our teeth.
But, so, you know, we deserved it because you look at the Watford game, the penalty that wasn't called that was then called for Watford, and it was nearly identical plays. You look at the City game, the dubious penalty that probably should have been given, but then the offsides that wasn't.
And the offsides.
Yeah, and then at Stoke City, Lacazette being called offsides. So even if people think that wasn't a penalty, I don't think that they were similarly outraged when we didn't get the penalty at Watford, when we got called offsides against Stoke, when we got screwed against Manchester City. So
and then we got the two offside goals against Tottenham.
Yeah.
But we'll let that slide.
So
let that one
so
slide.
It's 3-2.
We didn't mention that.
Now we still have one more good fortune play to win from.
Yeah, I think. I mean, obviously, we don't want to spend all our time praising or berating the referees, depending on whether they've gone Arsenal's way or not. But I think over the course of the season, Arsenal probably have had. They probably have had the unfortunate side of the decisions, I would say. Certainly, there are many examples that I can think of where they've probably been a bit unlucky in the decision that has been given. Let's move on to a couple of the individual performances. We'll start with Alexis Sanchez. He was a bit mardy, which for those who aren't from Yorkshire, means moody, grumpy, depressed. He wasn't happy. He was having a strop for much of the game. Do you think he played well, or do you think he played badly, Josh?
I think there's some middle ground where he was very hit and miss on the day. I mean, there were some plays where it looked like vintage Alexis, and there were some plays where he looked like the typical Alexis, where he was trying to do way too much. So, I mean, I think it did balance out in the end, so I think he came out right around average between his good and his bad. But, you know, for a player like Alexis, you obviously don't want to see him balancing out his bad and his good plays. You want to see him being able to change the flow of a game, which he didn't do against Burnley.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a stat just to kind of prove his frustration and yet creativity at the same time. He completed just 68% of his passes, and he tends to have a low pass completion rating, but that's very low. But he also made four key passes. He could, and no other Arsenal player made more than one.
You pay for.
Yeah, exactly. So he may give the ball away. He may make mistakes.
It's just like Fabregas when we had Fabregas all those years ago. I mean, everything would go through Fabregas, and we wouldn't necessarily mind if he lost the ball because we were aware of the fact that he could turn the game around with one pass. I mean, that's the kind of talent that we're talking about with Alexis, is as infuriating as he can be. And especially without Ozil in the team, he is the creative spark in the team. And therefore, I think you do have to give him that room to make mistakes or to misplace passes or to try things and fail.
Yeah, and I think the absence of Ozil was noticeable in this game, wasn't there? There was a clear lack of fluency and rhythm to Arsenal's passing. It wasn't as free-flowing. The movement wasn't quite as slick. And that's not to say that it was bad. There was just a little spark missing. There was a little oil needed to the machine. It was a little bit clunky. I think Ozil does provide that. He's so elegant and smooth in his movement and in his passing and in his distribution that he just calms down everybody around him and just provides that kind of a kind of smoothing effect, kind of compresses everything and takes off all the sharp edges that come with Arsenal's play at times. Let's look at Skodra Mustafi. Josh, I know you gave him Man of the Match in your player ratings. I think that's something that I and most other people agree with. Henry, just out of interest, would you have given him Man of the Match?
I mean, from everything that I've heard, he apparently was absolutely fantastic, and I'm not going to disagree simply because I'm in no position to comment simply of watching the highlights on Match of the Day. But he's come back and he's done a lot for us in two games. I mean, we haven't conceded very many goals. I believe it's only one when we've played Mustafi, Kashani and Monreal together. So hopefully that form continues for those three and we can continue to shut out oppositions.
Mustafi's played seven Premier League games this season. Arsenal have conceded one goal in those seven games. He has missed six Premier League games this season and Arsenal have conceded 15 goals in those games. Now, admittedly, you know, seven of those goals came against Liverpool and Man City, so that stat is a little bit skewed. But even so, there's still a clear pattern of Arsenal's defensive solidarity with Mustafi in the team rather than without him. And he also adds a little bit of fire. He is a character. He's not I think Koscielny is a bit more of a calmer, but often a bit of a vanilla type player, even if he maybe plays with a bit of an edge character-wise. He doesn't have that same leadership cutting edge that, say, Tony Adams used to have.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. I just want to ask one quick thing. I've heard a lot of good things about James Tarkowski. I know he gave away the penalty, but could you guys tell me whether he impressed you? Because he's apparently been incredibly impressive, replacing Michael Keane, who obviously left for Everton in a big money move over the summer.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent. I thought he was very good, and I've watched him closely this season, and I think he has replaced Michael Keane, who was probably Burnley's best player last season. I think he's replaced him very well. Him and Ben Mee both are good players. I know Sean Dyche wanted to sign him, I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago, from Oldham for about 150 grand, and he ended up paying 3 million for him in the summer. So Sean Dyche is obviously a fan of his and has been a fan of his for some time. Josh, what did you think about Tarkowski?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers say it all. I mean, he had 8 ball-winning plays in the match, and the rest of his defense only managed 2. He was central to the strong resistance that they put up against an attack that has the likes of Alexis, and he was unflappable until that penalty, which, as controversial as it is, you know, it's up until that point he had been fantastic. I think that he's definitely replaced Michael Keane easily, if not surpassed him.
I mean, because that's the case for me. If he continues to impress, I need to do some more film study of him. But if things continue as they are, maybe he's someone to watch as a possible replacement for Monreal, Mertesacker, Koscielny further down the line, because we are going to need bodies at centre-back moving forward. But I'm sorry to take it off topic. It's just I was interested just because I've heard so many positive things about him so far this season.
Yeah, no, he is playing very well, and he played well yesterday, even if it was maybe a slight error of judgment on his part for the penalty. Back to Mustafi. Josh, I know you are a big fan of his. Do you think he could be a future Arsenal captain?
I don't know who else would be better. I mean, I'm a huge Ramsey fan, and I think that he's a great candidate. But it's seeing the difference when Mustafi is in the match. I don't think we get through that first 30 minutes against Burnley without giving up a goal if Mustafi isn't in there. I mean, he won more aerials than any other Arsenal player, any two Arsenal players combined. He was fantastic, and like you said, it's not just in his physical attributes and his abilities on the field. It's every time you see him, he's coordinating, he's organizing, he's making sure everything is covered, all of his teammates are in the right place, and that's who you want as a captain. You don't want a figurehead like Mertesacker or Arteta, who, you know, a lot of respect for them, but, or Koscielny too. Maybe Mertesacker shouldn't be thrown in there, because I do think Mertesacker is a leader on the field, but I never saw Arteta or Koscielny, or especially not Walcott, when he was captain, as I try to forget that he's wore the armband, but I don't...
Kieran Gibbs. Yeah, Kieran Gibbs once wore the armband.
I just...
My word.
I don't see them as the captain type. I mean, you look at all these great Premier League teams have had a great captain, and I think Mustafi checks off all the boxes you could want for a captain, and he's still young. He could be a long-term captain, which we haven't had since... probably since Patrick Vieira, and he wasn't even captain for that long.
I mean, he's only 25, isn't he? He's younger than Wilshere. And to be honest, I quite like the idea of having quite a maverick player as a captain. You look at Roy Keane was an incredibly controversial character, mad as a March hare, as we would say here in the UK. Whereas Mustafi, very passionate, it seems. Yes, he can be rash. But if you want someone to lead by example, especially in these games, Josh alluded to the statistics and his influence just a second ago, maybe that's not the worst idea. I mean, I know Xhaka was mentioned as a possibility when he first signed, and I still am in support of that idea to an extent. But I think Mustafi, if his form continues and looking ahead, I don't see why Mustafi shouldn't be in the discussion to take the armband from Mertesacker at the end of this season.
Yeah, I think it's something to keep an eye on. I know Wenger is quite happy to change the captaincy from year to year and has tended to just give it his best player. So Cesc Fabregas was obviously captain for a long time, then Van Persie was captain for a season. Obviously we had Vermaelen as captain for a little bit as well. So he doesn't really, ever since the kind of Tony Adams, Patrick Vieira era, he hasn't really settled on a real long-standing, entrenched club warrior as a captain. And Mustafi, at only 25, you know, he could feasibly be at this club for another 6, 7, 8 years. I could quite easily see him being captain for maybe 4 or 5 of those years. It's not beyond the realms of possibility at all. And he certainly was excellent today. He backed up his performance against Spurs last week, which was good to see. I think in terms of just natural ability, he's always had the skill to be able to play at such a level, but his consistency has been questioned, rightfully. I think he makes mental errors. He makes positional mistakes as well. But certainly 2 games in a row now where he's probably been Arsenal's best player in both. And it's really nice to see. As we close out our look at Burnley, let's look at the substitutions that Wenger made. He obviously turned to Jack Wilshere. It was on about the 65th minute, if I remember rightly, for Alex Iwobi. I had a feeling if Alex Iwobi was not playing and it was Mesut Ozil, we probably would have waited a little bit longer to have made that substitution. But it was nice to see him turn to somebody relatively early in the game and give them a good 25 minutes to try and influence the final stages. He also brought on Danny Welbeck for Alexander Lacazette later on. Bit frustrating to see Lacazette come off again, especially because he looked quite sharp. His movement was good, his hold-up play was good.
I was unconfident even when Alexis went to take the penalty, because I simply thought, I know how, not bad, but how nervous I get when Alexis takes penalties and we've just taken our best penalty taker off the pitch. And it's just moments like that where you're thinking, you cannot have your most prolific player on the bench in a game where... Was this a must-win? Probably. You have to look at every game for Arsenal at the moment as a must-win in the Premier League. I don't think Wenger can continue with that tactic of taking Lacazette off, because I think in the end it will come back to bite him, knowing Arsenal and knowing our luck or our inconsistency.
Yeah, it is certainly frustrating to see Lacazette always come off.
Because Josh, Sanchez even had his penalty saved. Oh, Christ.
Josh, I know you were frustrated to see Olivier Giroud not come on, and with it being Danny Welbeck instead. I guess he was dealing with an injury, so that I guess could have played into Wenger's thinking a little bit. Why do you think he didn't choose to go with the Frenchman, who has been his super sub, certainly last season and also earlier this year as well?
I'm gonna have to give the answer of I don't know. I just it seemed like the perfect game where Giroud could save us, because Burnley were shelled up in their box. I don't like that they took off Lacazette, but I get that they did it because Lacazette needs space to maneuver, and I think we needed somebody physical up there, and I think that's what he was going for. But if you're doing that, why don't you go to the best physical striker in the Premier League rather than Welbeck, who I love, but he's not the guy you need there, especially because it all came down to set pieces and corners, and that's where you need Giroud. That's not where you need Welbeck. I mean, the only thing I can think of is maybe he's saving him for Huddersfield, or like you said, maybe he was still dealing with an injury, but he played against Colm, so I don't know what his line of thinking there was. It depends on what we see against Huddersfield.
Yeah, it is a little bit odd, especially because Wenger obviously trusts Giroud, and he has trusted him in that super sub role. For the last 18 months now, and he's been excellent in it. And certainly with the way that Burnley were defending, how deep they were sitting, the space was out wide, and Bellerin and Klasenac were both enjoying their bombardments forward down either wing, perhaps bringing on a more physical, aerially present striker in Giroud would have been the right move. Wenger chose not to anyway, and I guess in the end of the day, didn't hurt Arsenal, but you know, Welbeck didn't really add anything.
He touched the ball twice.
Danny Welbeck only touched
the ball twice.
And there was that weird moment where he kind of got knocked off the ball, then he got back on the ball, and then he kind of twisted past somebody, and then eventually lost the ball. And he just looked a little bit awkward.
He looks like Bambi on ice in front of goal, let's be honest.
Yeah, he is one of the worst finishing goal scorers I have ever seen, and he will still score 10 to 15 goals this year. It is. I mean, I love him.
Me too.
It is remarkable. Let's wrap up the Burnley game there. I guess it was an important win for Arsenal. 3 points is in the bag, up to fourth in the table, which is all good news. But the games come thick and fast, and after the little interlude we will preview the Huddersfield game, which kicks off at 7:45 this Wednesday evening, and it's not guaranteed to be an easy one, so we'll see you on the other side. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed our little review of the Burnley game there. Obviously, leading up to Christmas period, the games do not slow down whatsoever, and Arsenal are playing again. They're playing on Wednesday. They've got Huddersfield, who, let's be honest, they very, very nearly ended Manchester City's unbeaten run on Sunday. They were 1-0 up. Nicolas Otamendi own goal, living up to his name as one of the worst buys in Premier League history.
Ouch. That's a strong opinion, that.
That might have been a bit harsh. He's not as bad as...
Tell you what, I don't think he cares if he's unbeaten and he wins a Premier League medal, Andy. I really don't think he'd care about that title.
Well, yeah. Arsenal, they are back at the safety of the Emirates, where they've had great success recently. But Huddersfield are a team that have caused big teams trouble. They beat Manchester United They gave City obviously a good run at the weekend, and they will not be an easy team to overcome. I'll throw it to you first, Henry. Are you confident for this game? Are you more confident than the Burnley trip, or do you have a little bit of trepidation?
I always have a bit of trepidation when it comes to Arsenal. I think I've made my opinions regarding Arsenal abundantly clear, even in the three podcasts that we've done. But I am more confident heading into this game than I was the Burnley game, simply because we're very different to Manchester United. Manchester United are the kind of team that will go away from home and try and play for a 1-0 or a 0-0, whereas I have a feeling that Huddersfield are going to come to the Emirates and really sit in 10 or 11 guys behind the ball, and it's just going to be a case of we're going to have to be patient. I think Ozil's going to miss this one, so we might again lack creativity, but I think we're going to have to be patient, break them down. Hopefully we can do it early, and that way they'll have to escape, well, leave that plan. But I'm hopeful, but I'm confident in this game that we'll come out victorious.
Yep. Josh, I assume you expect a 10-0 victory. are you as confident as ever?
Yeah, I mean, I always think we're going to win every single game, so I might be a bit skewed. But, I mean, when you look at what Huddersfield have done away from home, they lost to 10-man Bournemouth 4-0. And if we can't beat a team that lost to 10-man Bournemouth 4-0...
They also lost to Swansea, which is quite a feat, let me tell you, because I've seen Swansea a few times this season.
Yeah, I mean, Huddersfield, they're a sprightly bunch, and I do admire them. But I, like you said, at the Emirates, with our full complement minus Ozil, I think, not quite 10, but I think we can get 3-4 goals.
Yes, I think it'll be one of them where if Arsenal are able to get that first half goal, then we could maybe see the floodgates open. If they can get to half-time 1-0 up, then maybe their fluid passing begins to get going and they begin to carve open Huddersfield. But if it is 0-0 after 55, 60 minutes and people start getting a bit nervous in the Emirates, gets a little bit little bit edgy. We've seen it before, haven't we, where this Arsenal team begins to struggle for ideas late in games, and either they're able to squeak one out like they were against Burnley, or a deep-lying opposition with a stretch Armstrong goalkeeper in net saving everything, and they defy the Gunners at home. Who do you think, obviously, with only three games between this game and Burnley, and then playing Manchester United on Saturday evening, do you think there'll be rotation, Henry? And if so, who do you think will be dropped, and who do you think may come in?
I think you will see some rotation, bearing in mind that we have a big game against Manchester United. I think Alexis will want to play. He wants to play every single game he can, so I anticipate that he'll start, especially with it being announced. I'm actually positive it's been announced that Ozil will miss this one through this illness that he has. I'd expect Giroud to come back in for this one. I'd also expect Jack Wilshere to feature, because I think from everything that I've heard, he was he brought more to the game than Iwobi in his little cameo against Burnley. I don't see how the wing-backs can be replaced adequately, seeing as we have no real alternatives to them. Maybe you bring in Coquelin for Xhaka, maybe, or Elneny. But I don't really see the defence changing much either, simply because I think we'll be dominant from a possession perspective in this game, and I don't expect it to be incredibly tiresome for them. So more towards the front end, I expect changes in this one.
Yeah, I think the only way you're going to get some rotation at the wing-back position is, say, if Nacho Monreal moves to left wing-back and he chooses to give Kolasinac, who was dealing with, I think it was a hip problem, wasn't
it? Yeah, that's a good point.
In the year. He may choose to do that and bring in either Rob Holding or Mertesacker or Callum Chambers as one of the three centre halves. But I do think you're right. I don't think there will be too much rotation. It will be really interesting for me to see what he does in the front three. I wonder if he'll rest Ozil again, just, you know, feeling a few after effects of being ill, especially with the United game on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, for me, yeah, it's this is where the Europa League, I think, will really come to benefit us. These guys have had so much rest. These, I'm talking about our starting 11. They've had a lot of rest, so they won't have the effects of the United players of playing Champions League games. They have more miles on their legs at this point, so perhaps it'll be good for the Arsenal guys just to maybe shake it up a bit. But then again, I'm not a scientist, so just completely disregard everything that I just said.
Josh, what rotation do you... Or, well, let me ask you a slightly different question. What rotation would you like to see, if any, and do you think that Wenger will match your desires?
He never does, but... I don't think there's going to be much rotation. I would... And honestly, I don't know if I'd like a lot of rotation. Like you said, we've had so much rest, and the only... I do think that Iwobi doesn't start. I think he already said, like Henry said, that Ozil will not be there. He literally disappeared from the team hotel in Burnley and flew home to get fixed. So I don't think he's coming back for that. I think Wilshere will start. I hope he does. He better, because if he doesn't, then you're going to have an angry Wilshere, because he's at that point now where he really needs a chance, and now there's no excuse not to give him one. So I think he starts. I'd like to say that I'd want Giroud to start, but I don't. I'd much rather see Lacazette given a chance at a game.
And scoring a hat-trick.
Exactly. I'd rather see that than see 60 minutes of Giroud being frustrated because he can't get the service he wants and then having to bring someone on to save it. I think that Lacazette is a much better... he's much better attuned to this attack than Giroud would be, because Giroud's just out of practice lately, and I think, you know, I hope he comes on against Huddersfield late on, but I don't think we start anything different other than Wilshere.
Yeah, I mean, Lacazette has hardly played this year because Wenger always takes him off in the fifth minute.
Yes,
but I think there is a point there that. In the front three especially, Arsenal do have really a lot of options. I mean, we've not even spoken about somebody like Theo Walcott, who nobody will actually...
No, don't say anything more. Don't.
Nobody
next.
Nobody want Walcott to start.
Everton apparently do, so we can sell him to there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe Huddersfield. Maybe David Wagner wants Walcott to start. But there are numerous players in this squad who... are, let's be honest, not really very close to playing any Premier League minutes. I mean, even when Wenger chose to put in Alex Iwobi when Mesut Ozil was absent on Sunday, he could have played Danny Welbeck, he could have played Olivier Giroud, he could have played Jack Wilshere, he could have played Theo Walcott, he could have even played Reece Nelson. Like, there are a lot of options in this squad in those front three positions, especially in the two wide positions either side of the centre half, and I think it will be interesting to see how Wenger chooses to rotate through them as we enter the festive schedule. Arsenal play 10 games in December, which is quite a lot. So, you know, 10 games in 31 days. That doesn't include Wednesday's game against Huddersfield, which is still in November.
One of those games is a Europa League game, and one of those games is against not Norwich. Is it West Ham?
It's West Ham in the quarter
Carling Cup
of the Carabao Cup. Yeah,
yeah, the Carabao Cup.
But even so, eight Premier League games is significant in a month. So this is a really busy period of time, So it will be interesting to see what Wenger does in terms of a rotation, both on Wednesday and through the coming weeks and months. Josh, are there any players who you are particularly keen to see? Are there any players who you think will go a long way to determining the result, whether they play badly or they have a successful evening?
I think Jack Wilshere is going to be a huge central piece to that, because he's got to know the stakes here. I mean, I don't think he's the kind of guy that needs added motivation, but he's going to have it because... I mean, you just don't know when he'll get this chance again. Again, I'm assuming he's going to start, but you just don't know when he'll get the chance again to prove that he should be an everyday player. I think Iwobi has had a lot of chances and he hasn't proven it. And knowing that Ozil will probably leave, I think that Wilshere is going to be central to Huddersfield, especially assuming that we control the possession, which we are bound to do at home against Huddersfield. I think he's going to be the main influencer on the match.
Yeah, what about you, Henry? What players do you think will have a keen influence on Wednesday's game? Assuming they start, obviously.
I agree. I think Wilshere... I hope Wilshere starts, because I've got a tweet all lined up ready to go for when he does start. and then you look at our main characters, if you will. Alexis, I think, will have to show up again in the absence of Ozil. Let's be real. Let's come out of this game with another victory. Let's keep this momentum going and let's go on against United. And we've beaten Tottenham. Now let's shake this Mourinho curse as well. That's the one I'm really looking forward to. But obviously, let's get this one out the way first and get 3 points on the board.
Yeah, I mean, in obviously, you'll be aware of this, Josh. In American terms, this is a trap game, as they would call it, where you have a tough game, which follows a relatively easy game. And I don't think Arsenal will fall into that trap necessarily. I think they will be okay. I think Wenger is actually, especially at home, is pretty good at making sure that his team are dispatched with the lesser Premier League teams. Arsenal have had a very good record at the Emirates against those slightly less dangerous teams. And Huddersfield, while respect should be paid to them, they don't have the same quality as, say, a Manchester United do, who Arsenal obviously play on Saturday. We will, just as a scheduling announcement, we will have a podcast later in the week where we review the Huddersfield game and delve deeper into the United game. So make sure you're checking us out on iTunes and Stitcher and on Twitter for that. That will come out later this week. Just a final point on this Huddersfield game. Another clean sheet would be nice, would it not, Josh?
Yeah, and again, call it painful optimism if you want, but I don't see how we don't get it, barring some sort of penalty or something like that, because if we're, you know, just from what I've seen against Tottenham and against Burnley, as long as we keep those same three guys back there, then there isn't an attack I don't think we can't stand up against. So yes, I a clean sheet would be huge, and I've every faith in the world that we're going to get it.
Yep, I never doubted for a second that you didn't. Henry, any last thoughts on the Huddersfield game this Wednesday?
None whatsoever. Let's just try and avoid the banana skin.
Yes, absolutely. Right, we'll take one last brief interval before we come back and answer a couple of Twitter questions that we got this week. Obviously, if you'd like to get in contact with us, you can get in contact with us on Twitter at Pain in the Arsenal. You can also find us at paininthearsenal.com as well. We love to hear your feedback. We are always working on things, and we always love to hear what you guys out there think of us, especially what you disagree with, because rarely do people agree on things nowadays. And if you've got any questions that you'd like us to answer, as we will come to answering this week, then please get in contact with us. We love to try and, well, likely fail to answer your rather strenuous questions. So we'll just take one last break and then we'll be back in just a tick.
Right, and we're back. I'm a little excited right now, guys. I've got to admit, Andy's handed the reins over to me for this final section. They've had enough of me.
This is not going to go well.
I mean, I know you secretly have had enough of me interrupting you, which I do apologise for, but it's just, I'm that kind of person. I've got to kind of speak my mind when it comes to me, because it's going to come and go, these pieces of information or these ideas. They don't last very long. But anyway, I'm going to put some questions to you that we received on Twitter today. I put a question out on Twitter And we actually got some feedback, which I was relatively surprised about. But then again, I'm not, because the Arsenal fan base is amazing. And we've got some awesome followers, even though they can be slightly frustrating and quite opinionative, let's just say, regarding our opinions. But the first question comes from Ollie Thorpe on Twitter, who's Ollie_Thorpe. And his question is, would you sell Ozil and Alexis in January or get the rest of the season out of them and let them go on a free? Also, who would you like to replace them? Now, I know we've answered this question before to an extent, but I'll put this question to you again, guys, seeing as we've been asked the question, so we might as well answer it. I'll go to you first, Andy, seeing as you're new in this position now, seeing as I've got the power. Maybe we should do this. Maybe this should be a permanent switch.
Well, I am very tempted.
But what do you think, Andy?
I think it's time for Arsenal to stick with Ozil and Sanchez. I think they, if they wanted to cut bait, the time to do it was in the summer. They missed that, and I think really the ability to be able to find a suitable replacement in January is going to be so limited. The options are so few. Just in terms of spitballing names, really, you're looking at somebody like Julian Draxler, somebody like Wilfried Zaha, and that's probably about it in terms of realistic names that Arsenal could go and sign in January. And I think to stay in the Champions League, Arsenal have to either keep Ozil or Sanchez or replace them with players of that quality. And players that are of their ability are so few and far between that to expect Arsenal to be able to try and find a replacement and acquire that replacement in the January window when other teams are so willing to not sell, I guess. I think it's a bit unrealistic. I think Arsenal need to see it through. They need to allow them to leave on a free, which, while disappointing, if they get them back into the Champions League and give them a summer to try and replace them, it could end up leading this squad in not a too shabby position if the right recruitments are made.
Yeah, I share your thoughts. I said, I think it was in the first podcast, that Arsenal made their bed when they didn't sell the pair over the summer. Now, considering that the money that is now available through qualifying for the Champions League, it's almost, I'm not sure what the finances are exactly, but you could almost say that were the pair to leave and we got Champions League football, that pretty much would balance the books. But again, I'm not aware of the finances. But Josh, I'd love to know your opinion on this.
Yeah, last time we talked about this, I was very adamant that they should be sold. And I think this time around, I'm not as adamant, just because after seeing how well our front three plays together, it's hard to fathom trying to start from scratch with that, with both of them being sold. That said, I do think it's possible, and I think it really just depends on the return that we can get. If we can get... I think there are going to be more names than we expect. I think Thomas Lamar might be available just because Monaco crashed out of the Champions League. They're still going to be competing in Liga 1. I think that he might be able to be pried away from them. Nabil Fekir might be able to get pried away. If we could get Fekir and Lamar, I would say by all means sell them, get something back for them. But if we can't get somebody like that, then no, I don't think you can sell them.
I mean, I don't doubt that there's going to be plenty of gossip surrounding the pair in January, but I just think Arsenal, considering, let's hope that they're in a similar position, they're in the battle for Champions League qualification in the Premier League, and they'll obviously be in the knockout rounds of the Europa League at this point. I think Arsenal, because of the situation that they find themselves in, I don't think that they will be able to sell them and replace them adequately. But nonetheless, I appreciate that. We'll now go on to our second question, and I apologise if I butcher this upcoming name, but Andy, don't you worry, I'm coming straight to you with a name that I know you struggle with, so don't you worry about this. This next question comes from Idirima Tocconi, who is at Toxic Thoe, T-H-O, on Twitter, and his question is as follows. Do you think these backroom changes, like the chief scout, whose name Andy is...
Sven Mislin... Mislintat. Sven Mislintat.
Silver Star.
I'll take it.
So, do you think these backroom changes, like the chief scout and other miners, are setting things up for Wenger's exit? If so, do you think he'll see out his contract or leave before it expires? Again, we've touched on this previously, but Josh, I'll give it a bit of a switcheroo here. I'll throw a curveball. We'll come to you first. What do you think about Mislintat's arrival and how it could possibly affect Arsene Wenger's future at Arsenal?
Yeah, I think it's definitely to prepare for his departure. Just because, you know, now you're putting him there, and there's talk of a sporting director, and these are positions that Arsene Wenger, we've mentioned it before, no other manager in the world has as much power as Arsene Wenger. And if you're going to suck that out of there, there's going to be this huge void that I don't think you can expect one manager to take care of. So you're trying to put, and I respect the club for this, you're putting a head of scouting, potentially a sporting director, you're putting all these things there to sort of form a safety net, so the next manager doesn't have to do all the things Arsene Wenger did, which we wouldn't want him to do. As far as if he'll see out his contract, I believe that he will, but I do think it comes down to how we finish this year, because I think if we finish this year winning the league, as I believe we can, as so few others do, I do think that maybe Wenger steps away on top, and I would love to see that happen. I do believe, though, that if we kind of show glimpses of maybe a positive future next year underneath him, then he'll stay. But I think if I had to say yes or no, will he stay, will he go, I think he will see out his contract for 2 years.
That's fair enough. I mean, I would be very interested to see if we finish this season with silverware, and I'm going to go on the assumption that Manchester City will win the title, but say we won the Europa League, the FA Cup and the Carabao Cup, I would be very excited heading into next season, and I'd be thinking, okay, Arsene, here is your last chance to dance. Go and spend this money and do it so that we can go out and give you the exit dinner that you rightly deserve.
I agree.
But Andy, I'm now going to swing it to you.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I agree, though. I will always be a Wenger in man, and I will always want him to stay. And I don't believe that Arsenal will ever sack him, even if the hirings of Mislintat and the rumours of a sporting director and things like that perhaps suggest that they are preparing for life post Wenger. I still don't think they will actually be the ones to end the Wenger era. I don't ever think that they will ever have the courage to do that. I think it's completely and utterly up to Wenger. I think Wenger will decide when he goes. And I think he is willing to retire. I think he is willing to step down when things go badly. He said that in the past. And I think Arsenal are essentially hedging their bets for when that may be. If that's at the end of the year, I'm not so sure. I don't think it will be that early on. I could, again, we don't know what will happen between now and the end of the season. If Arsenal slump like they did last year and they go on and finish sixth or even seventh, and they slip out of the Champions League and they don't win a trophy, then maybe Wenger will say, right, it's time to move on, especially with Özil and Sanchez leaving and a big, fairly large revolution of the squad taking place. Maybe Wenger says it's time for somebody else to come in and have a go. But I think if Arsenal have a good season and they finish in the top four and they maybe win a trophy again, then I think Wenger will think, well, let's have another go. Let's start investing the cash again if he does get any. And I can't see Arsenal saying no to that. I can't see Arsenal saying no to Wenger. I think Wenger will always be the one to dictate his future. But the hirings of Mislintat and the rumours of other hirings do suggest that they are preparing for the post-Wenger era. When that will be is another question, however.
I mean, he does certainly, there's no denying, love him, hate him, he brings an element of class to this club that I think every other club around the world envies, if I'm being brutally honest. I'm actually very excited about the hiring of Mislin Tat, and I'm anxious to see what he does, if not in January next summer. But just as we're recording this, Ollie Thorpe has replied to the tweet that I sent to him in reply to the question, and he's suggested, or he's put forward, Thomas Lemar and Draxler as his preferred replacements for Ozil and Sanchez. So it's almost as if he's read our minds there, which I give him credit for. But nonetheless, those were the only questions that I thought we'd have time to answer today, simply because, well, we don't want to keep people for over an hour, and plus I'm tired too. I've had a long, long day of school, and I'm not down for making this an hour, hour and a half. So, guys, are we about to sign off? Because then I can sign off and I can do it my own way.
Yes.
Go for it.
I give you the reins. Go on, Henry.
Can I do shameless plugs and everything?
You can do anything you want. As long as
I'm aware that we did the shameless plugs just before this segment with regards to the fact that our website is paininthearsenal.com, and you can reach us on Twitter at paininthearsenal, except the is without an E. And until next time, which is hopefully later this week, Andy really dropped the bomb on us with that announcement. We're kind of forced into the corner with that one now. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening.